For Friday, November 13th, we interview Mark and Nikita of Lostwood Games regarding Leviathan, the last day of the decade, in this super special bonus level 15. I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm John Fitch.
And you're listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Was my Cole impression on point? I think my voice is a little too high to be Cole. I don't have the deep voice.
No one will notice. Just drop down a register. Oh, we can fix it in post.
There you go. So I'll just sound like this. Okay. Today is a special bonus level. Woo. And we have a couple of very special guests from Lostwood Games, makers of Leviathan, the last day of the decade. And if you will, guys, go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Yes. Hi, I'm Mark Reiner, the scriptwriter of Lostwood Games. And here is also our programmer, Nikita.
Yeah. Hello. My name is Nikita Pigasov. I'm the programmer on the game. So I basically wrote most of code and helped with the game's assembling in Unity editor.
Awesome. Very, very cool. And listeners already know who I am from the regular level show. I'm one of the rotating guests, or not guests, but hosts rather. But we've got guest host John. John, do you want to talk a little bit to the people about who you are, what you do?
Yeah, sure. So my name's John, and I am Shaka Panda over on YouTube, and I run a YouTube gaming channel where we do Let's Plays and podcasts and all that fun stuff.
Awesome. Well, it's really late over in Russia for our guests, so I want to get into the exciting stuff so they can go to sleep.
Yes.
So let's go ahead and thanks get into that. All of that. Yeah, I'm sure with all the stuff you guys have been doing lately. Yeah, definitely. So let's go ahead and start talking about Lostwood Games itself as a studio. When did the studio form and how did it kind of come together? Were you guys like friends before or did you just meet each other on like one of the gaming game maker websites or how did that work out?
Well, let me start here because I have been at Lostwood since its inception, basically. At first, it started as me and Andrei Knyazev, our producer. We have played tabletop games, Dungeons and Dragons, for a long time. And we've been friends for a while. And one day he approached me and asked me whether I would like to make games with him. So since then, I had nothing better to do. I was still a university student. So I said, well, yeah, sure, let's do it. And we started working. At first, we were very... we were really low skilled, so we tried, you know, to create our own engine in C++ from the scratch.
That's a really hard task.
I was a developer at that time, and we had one other friend. And, well, we made a working prototype, but it took us, like, forever.
Yeah.
It was tough. And it all happened in 2011. I think, yes.
What kind of engine was that intended to be for? Like, what type of gaming was that created for?
Uh-huh. At first, we wanted to create something like an MMO.
Okay.
MMO platformer, I would say. We had, like, different kinds of weird mechanics we wanted to introduce to the gaming world. Yeah, and basically, our first game was to be a 2D platformer game. And we had a working prototype written in C++. And after we switched to Unity, we even made basically the same game in Unity.
Oh, wow.
And only after that, we started working on Leviathan, the last day of the decade.
Huh. Well, whatever happened to that first project that you were working on? Is that still something that you guys are doing? Or is that kind of like put on the shelf for right now?
Well, it is in hiatus. And
okay.
We don't think we are coming back to that project in near future.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
But probably we will.
Yeah, I'm curious. what
one day?
That's quite a departure, you know, in the style of game, from a 2D mm-hmm. platform or looking into doing an MMO, all the way to something that's like a adventure game visual novel. Like, it's mm-hmm. a huge departure. Like, how did you make that jump?
Well, may I say?
Yes.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, I came to The Last Wood 3 years ago. Before that, I was also a scriptwriter. So I work at the St. Petersburg game development company. I was a scriptwriter, and I was making games for children.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. and then I came to The Last Wood, and Andrei Knyazev said that he has some big plans on the Levav and Satan, but it's not developed. It's it seems like more than idea. So now I remember he said, "I want you to bring some darkness inside it." So yes, it may sound
yeah absolutely
yeah. So it may sound horrible, but we planned to make it really dark, really gloomy. So as I said before, it was more than idea, and we had not so much. And Nikita, help me.
All right. I would like to add... to answer your question more precisely, basically we were working on that 2D platformer. It was also based in the Leviathan setting.
Oh wow!
But we saw that even with the help of the Unity engine, it took us too long to achieve progress. Hmm. So we had a brilliant idea. Let's make a simple game. We will do it really fast, and it will make us some money to sustain the business. And
interesting.
What happened was that basically we switched completely to the development of that small, fast, money-making game, and it became much more than what we intended it to be.
I was going to say, because it certainly did not turn out to be something like that. It's massive. It's rich. It's deep. It's really it's an incredible game. But the original plan was, let's just do this real fast, make some money, and then put that money into our other projects. Very interesting.
Yes. And also we choose this genre because it would help us to develop the setting, the world of Leviathan.
Oh, absolutely.
Much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is something, as you guys may be aware, because I've been keeping Sophie, who also works at Lost Wood, in the loop. I've been playing a lot of your game. I have played through it many, many times. Yeah, understatement. And so I've played through it, you know, 7 times or so. And every single time I go through, I always find new stuff that I didn't see before. And it just never ceases to amaze me just how much is packed into this game. So definitely I can see all the attention to detail and all the development that's been going into that. So that's
awesome.
Yeah,
we tried to be very thorough while developing it. While writing text, we tried to provide the player with as much details about the world as we could, but without being, you know, too in your face about it.
Mm-hmm. And definitely there's a lot of optional story bits that you can pick up on that you don't need for the critical path in the game, but at the same time, they're there for anyone who wants to look for them and get that flavor text. So
yeah, you know, Jala and I were just talking the other day about Leviathan and observing how if you were to look at the game and say, oh, all you need to do is just what you need to do to accomplish finishing the game, just burn through the game, you would miss out on so much. Because mm-hmm. the minute-to-minute beats of just, like, finish this quest and finish this quest and move on to, through the story, you're missing mm-hmm. out on so much because there's so much more. And it's such a rich, rich, big world that you can really just spend all your time, like, talking to this person and talking to that person and clicking over here. And, oh, who's this? And, oh, there's a little fisherman. Let's go talk to the fisherman. And it just – there's things everywhere to do that is – not necessarily necessary to continue progress in a conventional sense in the game. And that makes for a world that feels real and big and rich. And it's really effective and really successful.
Yeah. And so, you guys, I am curious, you've mentioned that Leviathan as a setting was a thing that already existed before you started working on The Last Day of the Decade, and that your first game project that you were working on was also in the same setting. So that, was this something that you guys did like in D&D, or was this, you know, is this like a setting that I don't know about that's over in Russia that's like somebody else's setting, or what, where did it come from?
No, it was a completely original setting.
Okay, cool.
We didn't play in it in our Dungeons and Dragons sessions. We started developing it like purely for our computer games.
Okay.
And it has transformed so much from the original concept. Mm-hmm. In the original concept, it was like, you know, a fairy tale fantasy world with like animal spirits that were guides for humans, mm-hmm. and humans were like these tribal themed guys, and well,
yeah, and well, now you've got kind of like a steampunk, cyberpunky feel to some of it, and it's definitely developed a lot and changed a lot from then. You were going to say something, Mark?
Yes. From the very beginning, it looked like a mad mix of Pokemon and you may probably know this game. It's for Nintendo DS. It's Phoenix Wright.
Huh. Oh, Phoenix Wright.
Phoenix
really?
Wright.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Phoenix Wright was a huge influence.
Wow. Really? Interesting.
Wow, that is interesting. One of our other people on the network, Cole, he's one of our network heads at Duckfeed. He is a big Phoenix Wright fan, so he'll be interested to know that. Cool.
I'm a huge fan of the series too. I love these games.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. Very cool. The only reason why I had asked about whether Leviathan was something that you had developed for like a D&D campaign or something was just because a lot of times what I've seen as a trend is that people will develop it in a game setting, like a tabletop game setting, and then that helps to make the game more, you know, the world and the game that they're developing as a video game more complex and everything. And because Last Day of the Decade is such a complex game that has so much to it, it just felt like it had come from somewhere else because it was more prepared than it needed to be for the main story, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it always felt like to us playing it, it felt like there was never a moment where you had that movie set feeling where if you just looked mm-hmm. behind this wall or around this corner, and there'd be nothing there because all that mattered and all that was created was just for you to see. It feels like at every moment a living, breathing world where there's things happening everywhere around you, and you could go around that corner and there's something there and somebody's living their life and having their own story. It always feels like that. It doesn't ever feel sort of shallow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks. That's a really nice thing. That we tried to achieve while working on the setting. Actually, I have asked Andrei, the producer, he was the dungeon master, to have some sessions based in the world of Leviathan, but he always declined. He doesn't want to do it. And we stopped playing D&D after like several years ago. But this year we have started playing again, and he didn't want to play Leviathan setting again. So we have to choose a generic D&D 5 setting, or I don't remember exactly.
Well, I guess so he could take a break from it, right? Like he's spending all the rest of the time working on the game. You know, he's like, no, I need to put Leviathan down for a while.
Yeah, that's right. Too much Leviathan can hurt anyone,
yeah.
And harm anyone.
So how many people?
Sometimes.
Well, so how many people are on your development team at Lostwood, and what does everybody kind of do?
Well, Mark?
Well, it's five. Sometimes it was six or, well, five.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now we have producer, programmer, scriptwriter, artist. Yep, and our PR manager.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and some people who outsource some tasks.
Okay.
Well, as you could see, we changed our art style recently. We have changed our mm-hmm. Drawing style recently. And this is because we have parted ways with our with the artist who worked on Leviathan, the Last Day of the Decade. Mm-hmm. And now we are working with another artist. He's, unlike the previous one, he's from another city. So we work with him remotely.
Okay.
And also on the outsource part, we now outsource only 3D models for our new game because we decided to up our technical production level.
Ah.
And previously we outsourced music for our game. We outsourced it completely, all the music and sound design. But now we are going to try to do it with our own.
That's awesome. Oh, that's cool though.
Yeah, very much.
So what have been the most difficult challenges that your team has overcome in the making of this game? Now, I've looked around and I've seen a little bit of that just from some posts on the official Lostwood page, but I figured I'd let you guys answer that.
Well, in my opinion, the largest obstacle we have overcame was the breakup. In 2013, we have released 4 episodes of Last Day of the Decade, but the game didn't sell well enough. Our own money reserves were coming to an end. So the whole team was kind of felt down. We saw no bright future ahead of us. Mm-hmm. So one by one, the crew left the ship. I must admit, I was the first one to go. I also had to concentrate on my university studies. So one by one, we left and the whole team disbanded and the game development was frozen, stopped at the 4th episode. And only in 2 years later, in 2015, this spring, actually, we have reunited and started. We were very hyped up and for some reason, and we decided to finish the game. And we started working real hard on the 5th episode. I was working my day job, and on evenings and on weekends I was working on Leviathan. And well, after we released the 5th episode, it was a huge milestone to us. After which I felt that we, as a team, have grown, mm-hmm. have become more mature and strong.
Well, it's definitely one of the challenges for any indie developer that's starting out to keep with it when they've, you're putting in all this time and effort and love into this thing and you want to, show it to the world and have everybody recognize it and, mm-hmm. Be able to share that with people, share that passion with everybody. And so I have to say that I would have been very sad if you told me that you weren't going to finish the game. Now that being said, actually, we'll talk a little bit more about, episode number 5 here in a minute, but I did want to ask you though, I've seen a lot of fan art for the game and, the Lostwood forum that you have on your page. Mm-hmm. And I also know that fans helped with some of the translation work, on episode number 4 to get it over into English, which takes a lot of dedication for people to do that. And I wanted to know what you think draws all these people all over the world to your game specifically.
Honestly, I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't know what interesting to say about this, but I'll say that all this attention from the people from all over this world, it was one of the things that made us to reunite and to finish the game. Because it's hard to explain,
It's really amazing how, yes. I actually have no idea, why do the people, let's face the truth, we aren't, we are a relatively small game with a relatively small community, but I'm amazed how much these people contribute to the community, how much of the fan pictures are drawn every day. And you see what's the funny thing? Many huge games, large, larger than us games, mm-hmm. they don't have a following that dedicated and that mm-hmm. creative.
No, that's very true.
This is what amazes me.
Yeah.
Would you say that in the hiatus between the 2013 and then all the way back to now, as the No Doubt fan community was growing and connecting with each other, that the response is a big part of why you guys got back together, like Mark was saying.
Yes. One day in spring, we and Andre were having a talk about our lives and stuff. I was working a day job. I had a solid pay, so I didn't need to worry about money or stuff. But Andre, he didn't have a day job, and we suddenly realized that these 2 years he has been living from the sales of Leviathan, the last day of the decade. So we realized what that meant. And that meant that the game was accepted, well-received, and, well, people were interested in it and were buying it. And basically, this realization, it was a breaking point for me. I can say that for sure. So basically, yeah, the realization that people like our game, was what motivated us to reunite.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't easy, and it didn't look like a success story, but someday, yeah, we realized that we did it. You know, we looked back, we saw all the way we passed, and we understood we did it. And it was something that made us to continue and to finish the game and to make another one game. So,
yeah, producing Leviathan was an achievement in itself.
Oh, definitely it was. And that actually leads me to talk about, you know, when I first connected with the general Leviathan webpage, Sophie had been so kind as to answer some questions for me, because this was just when I was mentioning it on the level during a regular episode. And I just wanted to ask, you know, hey, when are the other episodes going to be available? Because I'm sure that's going to be a question that listeners will want to know about and things like that. And she ended up giving me a few copies of the game for me to share with some of the listeners, which, you know, I've abundantly thanked her for. A lot of them have played through at least a portion of it and have really, really liked it. And they've all asked me about episode number 5, because the English version is only available through episode number 4 at this point. And right now, as of yesterday, as of when we were recording on the 11th, you guys set up an Indiegogo campaign to fund the professional translation job, which again has to be outsourced for episode number 5, so we can get that into English, and also to do some editing to that fan translation of episode number 4. So that's supposed to be going on for, I believe, 2 weeks, right?
Yes, exactly. 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks. So as of the time that this episode will drop, which should be on Friday the 13th.
Oh, creepy.
Yeah, kind of creepy. Well, that works because, you know, you start the game with a severed head in your bag. It's fine.
Fair enough.
So, so as of that date, you should still have some time to go out there, and we'll put a link in the show notes for the Indiegogo campaign if you guys who are listening are interested in seeing that brought over in English. That would greatly help out the team for sure.
And, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And even though the 4th episode was basically community translated, we still have received some complaints about the quality of the translation. So, so that's why we would like to expend an additional effort to proofread the 4th episode.
And that's just like a quality control, like going back and, you know, doing that kind of a thing. So definitely you guys should help out with that if you can. I'll be doing my donation here tomorrow as well. So.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Of course. I'm pro Leviathan. So we already talked a little bit about Leviathan's original format and everything, and about, you know, how complex this game really seemed to be. But did you have any other, other than making it a little bit easier to program, did you have any other kind of motivation behind using specifically like the visual novel style?
Actually, I don't quite remember the reason for choosing actually the visual novel style. Maybe it was our infatuation with the Japanese like games, anime.
Yeah.
with the games like Phoenix Wright series, which are basically visual novels, right?
Yeah.
With some adventure element, point and click element in between. Mark, do you remember why we chose the visual novel format? I don't quite remember, actually, to be honest.
Well, me too, but, you know, we didn't choose visual novel style. It wasn't like we're going to make a visual novel, but we wanted to make a game based on a storytelling. So that's why visual novel seems to be the most suitable style, you know.
And also, as you got me thinking about it now, and looking back, the visual novel genre catered the best to our team, to the skills of our team. Mm-hmm. We had a great artist. We had a scriptwriter, so we had to make a game that was heavy on visual side and on texts. Mm-hmm. I was the only programmer, so we had to do less of the coding stuff.
You know, I want to go back to what you were saying earlier. You were talking about how it has that sort of connection with its origin with the Phoenix Wright games, and that they are, in a way, visual novels, but also, you know, click adventure games and things like that. And and that was something that immediately stood out to me, you know, within the first 15 minutes of playing the game, because when Jala came to me and said, hey, I have this visual novel game that you should check out, I thought, visual novel game? I don't normally play those. And she goes, no, this one's really cool. And so she sent it over to me, and I went in not expecting all of those adventure elements, all of the problem solving and all of that extra layer that really drew me in and made me feel like I had impact on the story. Because the couple of visual novels that I've seen here and there, they don't share the same level of immersion in the story, but is at the same time also the same level of like agency that the character seems to have in the world. It feels like, you know, I feel like what I'm doing really matters instead of I'm just sitting back reading a book that's being displayed to me bit by bit. And I find that like vastly much more satisfying. And I think that that's a really one of the things that makes Leviathan stand out, is that you have those elements where we do get to interact with the world instead of sit back and be spoken to and just have text dialogue and just have, you know, options in conversation, but we have an inventory, we have a phone, we have, you know, different things we can purchase. You know, in the beginning of the second chapter, you can choose to purchase different potions, and the potions you have will open up different opportunities and different things. You can choose not to do it entirely, and things like that add an extra layer of me feeling like what I do has an impact on the story and how things move in a much more dramatic way. And it's so satisfying. I just wanted to say that that was something in the game that I thought was really awesome.
Definitely.
Thanks for your comment. We wanted to do much more than that, but because of the time and the costs, we had to cut down on many of the concepts, many of the depths we actually planned in the game. And we think that now that we have more experience, we can make everything much better in our new game.
Yes, sometimes it looked like we walked through the graveyard of ideas. So many things were thrown away. So many things were accepted but changed. We made some episodes again and again. So we made an episode, we played it, and we see that we didn't like it. So, and we begin to
change it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and that's why there are so many options inside the dialects, because it was some themes to make it more complex, more interesting.
And it's very successful. It's very successful. You had said that there's some changes between the first game and the second game. Could you touch on a couple of the differences that we can look forward to?
Well, from the technical standpoint, one of the most noticeable changes is that we are going to use 3D models for our locations.
Oh, wow.
Not for all of them, but for, for most of them. And that will give us the opportunity to have camera move more freely. You know, we can rotate the camera, we can, like, suddenly transition to a top-down view and stuff like that. We thought that in Last Day of the Decade, our locations were a little bland. They were nicely drawn, but they were static, and that doesn't catch the eye sometimes. So we aim to make the locations more alive, like by adding lights, by adding animations and stuff like that. We tried to add animations to locations in last year of the decade, but due to performance issues, we had to throw away that idea. And here we think it will work out better. We are aiming for increased dramatic effect in dialogues. In Last Day of the Decade, our dialogues were basically the frames of text interspersed with flashes, sounds.
Well, text speed.
Yes, text speed. Right. Mm-hmm. And, well, different effects. We actually like that idea, and we want to improve on it. We want to add more text effects. We want to add more, well, we want to make the text a better medium to convey the story. We want to use the text and the manipulations that we can perform with it. We can use it to a greater extent than we used it in Last Day of the Decade.
Yes, imagine something like a comics bubble on a background. Probably the waterfall somewhere far away, and you can hear, or to be honest, to read the sound typed on a bubble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So we want for some things like the dripping water or people talking in background, there'll be, you know, text appearing above them, text appearing where the droplets of water drop, and it will be like not in your face. It will be very subtle.
Almost like comic book sound effects, almost?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, wow,
yes.
That's cool. That is a really neat idea.
And we want to combine the textual effects with sound effects and with visual effects and go to the next level.
Awesome. Well, the reason why John gets extra excited about that is that you're talking to two people who also make comics.
That's true.
I'm an independent artist. I'm a painter, but I also do a comic, and John also does comics. So.
That's actually how John and I originally met. I reviewed her comic on my old podcast, and then we became friends.
So
that's a cool story.
So yeah, you've already got us super excited about that if we weren't already because of Last Day of the Decade. So there you go.
That's great though. I love the idea of using text in, you know, in a graph because a visual novel, I mean, part of its medium is text. I mean, a huge piece of its medium is text. And so instead of just saying, let's just use a sound effect for water dripping, like why not actually use text in it? That's just so brilliant. I love it. That's really cool.
Yes, we have to use every tool available to us to its fullest. Well, that's our intention.
Well, speaking about that, in the Last Day of the Decade, one of the things I did want to ask about was the phone that you have in the game. You know, it's in your inventory and you can call people whenever. And the first couple of times I played the game, I didn't like I tried a couple of times and then nobody answered and then I just gave up on it. But then on subsequent playthroughs, I started calling people all the time and finding just like story bombs dropped on me all the time from people that would, you know, when they answer, they have so much to say and there's a lot more information you can get, you know, through that phone as a tool. Now, was that something that was kind of decided for like at the beginning when you were setting up those adventure elements, or did that kind of develop as the game was being made, like when you were revising the episodes?
Well, about the phone, we simply wanted to have a cell phone in our game. That's why we added.
Yes. You know, cell phone in a fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it wasn't a non-reason because the cell phone was just another way to tell more stories inside the basic story of the game. So we just use it for that purpose.
Also, another reason we wanted to add phone to the game because we wanted to appeal to like the general public and. People at that time, and well, now, we use smartphones all the time. So we can basically walk out on the street and see people, you know, holding a phone in one hand and doing stuff on it. So we wanted to produce a sense of familiarity by including smartphones in the game.
Yeah, and then too, you have Dorina, who she has her phone in her hand all the time.
Always. like some people.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just always on the phone, always messing with it. You know, that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. But another thing that was interesting that I noticed right off the, you know, from the start of the game when I first started playing it was the diversity element, because your best friend Kale is homosexual and he loves you, but like, you know, and you from the very beginning of the game, you encounter bullies and they start picking on you for being friends with him, and you have this mm-hmm. whole element where it's not just about, you know, that character's in the game, but the problems that, you know, face not just those people, but the people who love them and care about them. And I wanted to know, like, what you could say about that decision to add that diversity, because the concept art for your new game, Leviathan the Cargo, also mm-hmm. has like a pregnant woman and a dark-skinned man. So you've still got that diversity element going.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'll answer shortly. I hope Mark will add something. We like this diversity element because it is real and it exists in our like real world mm-hmm. out there. And we don't want, you know, to like draw attention to the problems of gay people or to the problems of dark-skinned people or whatever. We just want to
represent reality with your
represent reality mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm.
That was actually really interesting to me too, just because there's no punches pulled by anything in this game. Like, you know, you start with a severed head in your bag, and then those bullies are really, really rude and mean and horrible, and you know, just some of the stuff that goes on. I'm just like, wow, they did that. Kind of like, you know, it's kind of raw, I guess, would say, you know, mm-hmm. would be like, you're not sugarcoating it or trying to, you know, make it more, I don't know, politically correct or something. You're just
That's
it.
A good word. And mm-hmm. it was exactly our intention. We didn't want to be, you know, we wanted the raw truth, like, mm-hmm. well, to show the world as it is. And we wanted, and in the world of Leviathan, we like reference our real world. And we didn't want to hide anything or to show people, like, you know, this fairy tale fantasy world. We like it raw and green.
Well, and then it makes it more relatable because everybody's mm-hmm. had a situation where they've either been in that situation themselves or they have been around it when it has happened. So that definitely makes it. Mm-hmm. On that note, though, like if you had to give me like a moral of the story for last day of the decade, what would that be?
Well, that's a hard one.
Yeah, I know. Since we've got this dark and gritty kind of situation, what's the moral of the story? Like what were you trying to show with the story?
Well, I hope that Mark, the script writer, can answer better than me.
You know, the moral is that there is no moral at all. I mean, there is no moral like a scene to explain, and there is no moral like a scene that it is all above the people's intention or people's desires.
Well, like every single one of the characters has good and bad points to them. Even Kale, who is probably the nicest person in the game, still has, you know, like he has a breaking point, and there's a point where he just is just, he's done, you know, and that kind of a thing. So it's kind of a little bit more, I guess, balanced would be the word. Well, it's not just a good, happy thing. There's not like a right, I guess, a right answer. Is that accurate?
Well, yes, I would like to add, I think I can finally, I think I found the words. I think Last Day of the Decade doesn't contain any, you know, moral like a fairy tale or whatever, because it is just like our real world and lives of the real people. They don't contain any moral or morals whatsoever. They just exist. And so do the people in our world and, well, the story of the Last Day of the Decade. I think it goes something like this.
Okay. So since you're talking to a couple of people who make art, I had to ask, how much input did your artist have on the development of how these characters look? I mean, Mark, as the script writer, did you already have a really good idea of what they were going to look like, or did you kind of leave some of that up to your artist?
Well, sometimes we... Nikita, help me again, please.
Usually, concerning locations or characters, we describe to the artist, you know, the features, the characteristic traits, like we wanted Julia to be, well, with large...
Yeah, well endowed, definitely. Yeah.
Well endowed.
Yeah.
We told the artist that we wanted to have such and such thing on the location in Oliver's child room and whatnot. After that, we left everything to him. He had a consistent style. He worked with us. Well, we had, you know, hearings of our script all the time. So the artist was in the loop about what was happening with the game and what was happening with the setting. So he had a pretty good impression on what was happening in the world and what we wanted to convey. So... basically, all the clothing. I don't think we ever asked him to change like any of the characters' clothing or stuff. We only asked him for features that should stand out, and everything else we left up to him.
Okay. Insofar as just the world overall, we've talked about it a little bit, that it's kind of steampunky, sort of almost cyberpunky at certain points, because there's points in the game where there's suggestion that there's aliens, you know, technology and things like that. Is there, and this isn't something that comes up in the game, but it's just something that I want to ask just overall for curiosity's sake. Is there an explanation in like the history of the world itself for the existence of some of this technology alongside some of these, you know, like magic or demonic elements?
Yes, there is. Like John said, scenes in our settings are not just the movie props. Mm-hmm. So all these things, all these sci-fi elements, they have their explanation in the history of the world. We have spent a lot of time, especially after releasing Last Day of the Decade, we spent a lot of time working on that part of the setting. And we hope that Leviathan the Cargo, our new game, will reveal more answers about the technology, the Plague King, and all the related stuff.
All right. That was my next question. I was going to ask you, well, actually kind of both of my next questions. Yeah. First, I was going to ask you about whether you were going to share some of that information in the next game. And then also I was going to ask you for a little bit more information of whatever you're willing to say about the cargo, just overall as what your plans are with that game and what you want to show with that game.
Well, Mark, could you tell me what I'm going to show about?
Yes, I can probably say that Leviathan the Cargo is a next step. It's a story that takes place after the Leviathan, the Last Day of the Decade, and we can see some characters from Leviathan the Last Day of the Decade, like Julia, like Gail, like Oliver. And it's a story that's strongly connected with Leviathan the Last Day of the Decade, but it's a family drama too. It's a family drama told through another point of view, and it's focused much more on love, on family relations, on friendship, but it is also cruel. It's also
well, it's
hard.
Yeah, it's Leviathan. It has to have that
edge
in
that
there.
Dark feeling, yeah.
Yes.
I would also like to add that the story in the last day of the decade, we have, you know, a storyline that like goes from the beginning to the end, and we also have some themes that are happening in the world during the the progression of the story. And these themes are mentioned, well, we do not try too hard to draw players' attention to them. And they happen somewhere in background, but some of their effects affect how the player how the characters interact with the player and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And in the cargo, we want to show more of those effects, of background effects like political intrigues, what was happening with the, you know, the ruling families, mm-hmm. what is happening with all this technology that is hidden in the tower. What is happening in the whole world of Leviathan? We have thought of everything. We have thought a lot about all the events in the world, and each event somehow affects, you know, the world that the player sees. So we hope that what we want to achieve in the cargo is by showing the effects of like huge worldwide events, we can tell player something more about the world and like some of the things that he saw in Last Day of the Deacon, and they made little sense to the player. They would make more sense after playing Leviathan the Cargo. And it is our intention, like, for the nearest future. We want to, with each game, we want to tell more and more about the setting, but we do not want to be in your face about it. Mm-hmm. We want it to be subtle.
Well, definitely, when I played through The Last Day of the Decade, all the different times that I have, first off, I have a tendency of rereading far more of the text in that game than in most other visual novels that I have played. And that's just because there is so much content and so many things going on, like you mentioned, that I just need to reread it to refresh my memory and keep all the parts straight in my head about all the different things that are going on. Now, not all of that is important to the direct storyline, as we've already talked about, but the world itself is something that I personally am the most excited about. And if I am to draw some kind of fan art for you guys at some point, it'll probably be of a world thing more than of a specific character or something like that. So, yeah, so definitely that is something that I can appreciate as both somebody who creates and also as someone who consumes. And so you've already mentioned the Plague King is part of the cargo because the Plague King's tower. From what has been released on the press release about this game, it's about a group of smugglers taking something through that tower. Will you encounter the Plague King? Or is that something you can't tell me?
Wow.
I think that's a no-no zone, huh? I'm not supposed to ask that.
Wow.
Mark.
Well, will you at least learn a little bit more about the Plague King? We can leave it at that.
Definitely.
Okay. So in the game, when Leviathan is ever mentioned, it's mentioned kind of both as like a world and as a creature. And I just wanted to ask more about that. Like, what is Leviathan really? Are we going to learn more about what that is insofar as like the Leviathan storyline is concerned? Not Leviathan as in game, but Leviathan as in the thing in the world or that is the world or whatever it is.
Well, Leviathan is the name of the world, and moreover, it is the name of the continent. You know, it's a planet with one continent, and this big territory called Leviathan. Mm-hmm. And Leviathan, it's a kind of creature. It's a kind of living planet.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's alive. It's much more than rock in the space. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of big underwater creature like manatee.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's awesome.
It's traveling from the beginning of the world to the end of the world, to the end of times.
Wow. Okay. Well, is that something that is going to be talked about a little bit more in the next game too? Because it was kind of just a little bit mentioned in Last Day of the Decade.
Yes, because, you know, our setting is like a puzzle, and every episode of a game and every game makes it more and more completed.
Awesome. That's a good way to say it, because it looks like there are a lot of moving parts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's hard to, you know, keep them all.
Yeah, you have to have a wiki just for you guys to look at, right? So, well, is there something in specific that you guys would like to share with some of the current fans of the game or some of the listeners who, you know, got a copy and started playing or something along those lines?
I personally would like to say, first of all, thanks to all of you who bought our game, who played our game. We appreciate all the support we get because your support is basically our main motivation. And when we see that you like our games, then we have the strength to keep on making games. And that's what we really love to do. I would also like to add to people who like our game, especially from the international community, please don't hesitate to, you know, to
reach out and
to reach out to draw like fan-made pictures, to write fanfics and stuff like this. Our Russian community, which we have cultivated a lot, has made such a huge amount of pictures of fan-made stories. We were like really amazed how they managed to come up with these things, and it is really beautiful to see this response to our game and to our settings. So I personally would really love if something similar happened, like in the international community. And it would be really awesome. I would love if that happened.
Yes. You know, we want to attract more attention, of the international community. And, it would be great if we achieve it.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that's kind of part of the reason why not only have I talked about it on several different episodes of The Level, but I've also told so many people, hey, you've got to try this game. John is one of those people who
absolutely.
I was like, no, you really need to try this game. You know, try this game. It is available on Steam. You can get it on Android. You can get it on iOS. Get a copy of this game. If you don't, I'm going to get it for you. You have to play it.
That's really awesome. Huge thanks to you, Jella.
Oh,
yeah. Thank you, Jella. Thank you, John. It was nice to have a conversation with you, and we had a nice time.
Well, thank you so much. I will say again, though, these guys have an Indiegogo campaign out there.
Yeah, go check it out.
Yeah, they you know, kick them a few bucks if you already like the game, if you're interested in what you've been hearing, kick them a few bucks to help them out with that translation, and, you know, we'll see you guys in the future when you get the cargo starting to be released.
May I add one?
Oh, sure.
I have a pro tip to people who might be interested in buying our game. The Steam version costs $15, and the minimal Indiegogo donation is $10, and you receive a copy of the game.
Oh, there you go.
That's good
right.
idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. If you guys are listening to this and you have not played the game yet, there's your pro tip straight from the source. You know, go kick them some bucks on the Indiegogo campaign and get yourself a copy for $10. So, all right. Well, thank you guys so much. I know it's really late for you and you guys have to get some sleep sometime, but thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for having us. It was really nice.
Yeah. Thank you and bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Goodbye.
That was bonus level 15. I wanted to thank you again for stepping in, John. Cole's been having a pretty tight schedule lately with PRGE and COSI and Fallout 4.
Yeah,
you
Fallout
too,
4,
right?
Yeah, a little bit of that. Yeah, it was absolutely my pleasure. It was different to try and do interviews. I haven't done a lot of interviews. I'm normally just rambling about stuff. So
yeah,
that was a bunch of fun. It was cool to talk to somebody who actually like made the game that I played like this morning. You know, I mean, I didn't play just this, you know, but yeah, it was wild to like, man, these people like made the thing that I was just doing. Like, that's crazy. It was really very satisfying. It was really cool.
Definitely. And it's because of your podcasting skills that that we were able to record this without Cole. Oh my gosh. So, but in either case, yeah, you've been on the Fallout 4 kick lately too, haven't you?
Oh, so much. Yes. Yes. My roommate Chaz, is a dear friend and a Fallout super fan. And when it came out that it was going, they were going to be offering the Pip-Boy edition, we both immediately actually bought those.
Yeah.
And so there are two Pip-Boys in our house, and all we've been doing is just playing Fallout. So
I'm sure. But you guys also released a podcast of your own recently, yeah?
Yes. So yeah, we just started two podcasts on my channel, and we'll also be setting up websites for them shortly. One of them is just Ron, my friend Ron and I, talking about games and pop culture and everything, and it's a little bit more long form. But then, yes, actually specifically talking about Fallout, my friend Chaz and I, we're going to be doing what we're going to call semi-inspired by the great title of the Duck Feeds Dark Souls podcast. We're going to be calling it Craterside Chats, which I thought was such low-hanging fruit that there's no way somebody hadn't taken that name, but it hasn't been. Like, I did a bunch of research and looking around, and no one's using it, and so I was like, mine. And took it, you know. But yeah, so I'm really excited, which is going to be like a little micro vidcast / podcast, you know. We're going to hit one subject, it's going to be quick, it's supposed to simulate the conversations that the two of us have very regularly about Fallout stuff, you know, whether it's a mod or we've gone way deeper than is really reasonable, talking about like the reason why this is good or this isn't good, or, you know, is the hardcore mode in New Vegas just a bunch of extra busy work, or does it have value, and how does that affect your immersion, and blah 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 blah, and we go crazy. But it's fun because we dive deep into a game that a lot of people, ourselves included, really hold dear, and it seems like there's basically just an endless stream of things to talk about when it comes to Fallout. So we're looking forward to starting that. And it should actually be releasing the same day that this comes out. So you can go check it out over on the channel.
Cool. Well, as for the admin for the level and for Duckfeed in general, you guys know the drill. Rate and review us on iTunes. Hit us up on the social channels.
Do it. Rate and review.
Yeah. Yeah, and let us know what you guys think of this bonus episode without Cole in it. I really shouldn't keep saying that, but the other day, everybody on the level was talking, and they were like, oh yeah, so everybody, you know, everybody else has been out except for Cole, because Cole kind of has to record the show and stuff, and so that's why I was extra, you know, amused by that fact. But anyway, for your fearless hosts, you can hit me up at Jolichon or Neon Sky Studio on Twitter at 2John.
Yes, you can hit me up on Twitter at Shaka Panda. That's 2Ks, S-H-A-K-K-A, Panda, and then Shaka Panda Plays on Facebook, and then, of course, Shaka Panda is the channel on YouTube, and I'm all over the place, you know, in general, just making an ass of myself and having a good time and talking games.
Awesome. And because I played a little bit of Dark Souls, I can say this now. Until next time, praise the sun.